Welcome to The Gauge, a new podcast brought to you by Green Gauge, the first fully integrated financial services group, bridging the traditional financial services space with the new digital innovations happening in crypto assets and blockchain. In this series, we gauge expert opinion on the latest tech trends and plan to bring you a measured approach to discussing key developments in the world of blockchain and digital assets.
Welcome to another episode of The Gauge. I'm delighted to have the founder of Credi, Alessio Marinelli, with us. Alessio, welcome.
Hi, Sean. Delighted to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
I've been really delighted to have got to know you over the past months, particularly since Credi has launched. It'd be great to hear a little bit about your background. I know you've got Big Four experience, quite a few of them traditional, but also more recently, you managed over $1 billion of a credit book in the blockchain space. Maybe could you talk through your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much for the question. That's really nice of you. So I come from an engineering background. I specialized in astronautics and space engineering. And throughout my career, I've worked in data analytics. So I spent quite a lot of time, as you mentioned, in consulting. Started off in Accenture and then moved on to Deloitte and KPMG. So Accenture has certainly cemented my knowledge of technology and allowed to develop skills I already have, but developed skills around technology design and technology implementation, the management of large transformations and so on. And then, of course, working at Deloitte and KPMG gives me a fantastic grounding specifically around risk management processes, operational processes, an organization. So any of the companies I founded have built on solid foundation when it comes to risk management processes and operational processes. More importantly, all three companies have given me the opportunity to have exposure to different industries and different jurisdictions. So I was lucky enough to work expansively in the UK, Europe, US, and a lot in Asia. And then what that has done for me is it's allowed me to look at how different industries approach the formulation of strategy and value creation. More importantly, what I've learned through my corporate life is the importance of the development of strategic ecosystems that can enable and accelerate value creation for a company. So that's how my career has developed. Throughout my career, data analytics, as I said, was a common denominator throughout. And the importance of data and predictive modeling has very much been the bedrock of my career.
How did you get into the blockchain space?
So during consulting, I've worked quite a lot in financial services. And when I left the corporate world, I joined a B2B non-bank lender in Asia that operated in three different countries. And actually, this is where I finally had the opportunity to apply my knowledge of technology and data analytics to a proper real business. And from there, I started my career in private credit at a CXO level. So I spent quite a lot of time as a both founder, CEO, and chief product officer, developing not only financial offerings, but also hands-on experience in risk management and technology implementation around risk. So when the opportunity came a few years ago, through one of my connections, to create a company that brought together the best of private credit and its technology with decentralized finance, I jumped on it. So what the problem statement there was, one of the largest stablecoin issuers in the world with a balance sheet of around $6 billion wanted to explore the opportunity to reduce volatility in their balance sheet by swapping some of the crypto assets that they invested in into real world assets. And so that's where my knowledge and expertise came to the fore. And I was lucky enough to build and manage a portfolio for them, quite a large one.
Which is fantastic, coming in full steam. I'd love to hear your thoughts on why tokenization for private credit.
Yeah, so I don't discard the value of centralization in traditional finance and the benefits that is brought with regards to trust and regulations. Although one may argue in the last few decades, both of these areas have been eroded quite a lot, particularly trust after the great financial crisis. But I've also learned centralization leads to subjective decisioning. You could open a business, but banks may refuse to open your bank account. That's subjective decisioning there. Or the decision from banks to really treat small and medium enterprises, for example, as we discovered recently here in the UK, as a toxic asset class where actually they're a fantastic driver for any economy in the world. But why tokenization? Well, tokenization was trying to, while in my previous company, I realized the benefits of blockchain and what blockchain could bring to what traditional finance has been hampered by. So, for example, traditional finance in the last few decades has developed a lot of inefficiencies when it comes, for example, to costs and onboarding barriers and access to asset classes that could deliver much higher yield for investors. And as I mentioned earlier on, it has also inhibited small and medium enterprises or other industry sector to access vital services and products. So I think tokenization, when you remove all the unfortunate incidents that are associated to tokenization, the technology itself can do a lot to unlock liquidity, eliminates these barriers that have been created through the years with centralization, and most importantly, it can remove inefficiencies that are currently in the systems. And I think once you apply blockchain to remove all of these three hurdles, you can actually deliver not only fantastic solutions and cheaper solutions to businesses and other clients of traditional finance, but also deliver more benefits for investors on the other side.
It's fascinating to see. This is a theme we're hearing a lot in the industry, the efficiencies and additional liquidity that can be achieved. Obviously, what you're building is a bridge between the traditional and the digital with some DeFi thrown in. I'd love to hear your thoughts on what differentiates Credi and what's the broader vision for what you're building.
I think because of the over 10 years experience in private credit and the many years of experience in consulting and the more recent experience in blockchain, what I wanted to do, I wanted to actually bring the best of the two worlds together, really. So there are, as I mentioned earlier, I absolutely don't discount what traditional finance has developed and achieved in centuries of operations. There is a lot of value in that. But equally, I think the blockchain will be the technology of the future for financial services and can bring not only the technology itself, but actually also the democratization of finance can bring benefits to institutional and retail clients alike. So with Credi, we wanted to bring the two together. So we have our deep expertise in credit underwriting for SMEs and private credit in general through blockchain, because blockchain eliminates the inefficiencies, provides a lot more transparency to investors, but more importantly, it unlocks much needed liquidity for small and medium enterprises and other businesses.
So I'm obviously excited about what you're building. We announced together the first pool that Greengage has ever done with a partner for DeFi and lending to SMEs. It would be great to hear your thoughts on the broader landscape of financial services and where you see the solutions that you're building slotting in to maybe in a few years down the road, the way that businesses might be looking to achieve lending through new technologies.
That's an interesting question. At the moment, we only specialize in private credit and specifically forms of lending that are considered to be asset-backed lending, because we, of course, we wanted to cement our offering on capital preservation. But as businesses evolve, I think what tokenization can do, it can facilitate the formulation of novel financial products that can be adapted more easily and readily to new emerging financial sectors, as well as existing ones. So that's one aspect. The other aspects are more from an operational point of view. I think there is a need to maintain and strengthen onboarding checks like AML and KYC. But again, through blockchain, those disciplines could be streamlined, and they could be both more robust and more streamlined at the same time through blockchain, avoiding the need of having to do these processes of onboarding an AML and KYC on multiple points through the value chain and actually doing it once, storing the results on a non-fungible token and sharing that across the industry, to give an idea. But there are certainly a lot of democratization of finance could open so many different opportunities for new financial products and revenue streams for businesses.
You're clearly passionate, at least to me, around SME lending. How do you balance the risk of default with capital preservation? How do you strike that right balance between the two and finding the mix in the pool?
So if you look at the needs of SMEs, the biggest need at the moment is access to cash flow finance. And we try to marry our need for capital preservation with financial solutions that could support cash flow finance. So we started by focusing on two asset classes, receivable finance and invoice finance. And the reason we've done that is because they're both classified as asset-backed securities. They are secure form of lending. They have a very short exposure. So to give you an idea, the type of assets we currently finance have an exposure of 30 to 60 days. What we do is we focus on SMEs, but we focus on SMEs that deliver services and products to very large counterparties because the nature of the products we provide, so receivable and finance and invoice finance, our risk is mitigated by financing assets that, or invoices, for example, that have been issued to very large counterparties. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is, of course, the asset classes we have selected have a very strong structural and legal protection. The legal framework around these assets and recovery from these assets is a very strong framework, particularly in the UK, US, and Europe. And then finally, we apply a very large degree of diversification. So although, for example, the average size of any invoice we have in our portfolio is $3,000, and these invoices have been issued to counterparties that have an average annual revenue over $500 million a year. So there's many levels of protection that we apply on this. And just to go back to the previous question around how do we mitigate risk, one of the strongest points that we do, and actually is a point of diversification. So we are both an asset management company, but we adopt a direct lending approach. We select every single opportunity we finance. And like many companies that have tried and failed in this sector, what we have decided to do is rather than to make these offerings scalable, rather than relying on direct marketing and brokerage firms, we decided to go to market through trusted partnerships. So any SMEs that come to us has already been bonified by our partners because they already have a relationship with them. So this mitigates our risk, but also makes our offering a lot more scalable.
That's quite an attractive yield, considering you say it's maybe less than some of the peer group. And do you think that's because you're focusing maybe more on prime opportunities rather than subprime? Or what's the delta?
It's a good point. We're trying to focus on SMEs that service counterparties that are classified as an A-rated counterparty in our underwriting policy. So parties that have a probability of default of less than 0.25%. It's true, we could potentially go to SME to SME invoice finance, but that's highly risky. It doesn't need to go further down the risk or further up the risk scale, so to speak.
Fair enough. I'd also be curious if I could ask maybe some of the standard questions you get, if yeah. There's any buckets of them that as someone gets their head around from a more traditional background to what credit is offering, what are they typically asking?
From an investment point of view.
As a liquidity provider.
As a liquidity provider, the type of question we would get asked, first of all, they will be around our underwriting policy, so the types of businesses we lend to, the type of products we do, the type of counterparties we elect to finance or to work with. So that would be one, and the level of the diversification we do. From an operational point of view, they would also want to see a consistent approach or an application of our underwriting policy. And then analyze the results that we have achieved thus far in terms of loan data tape and analysis of our transactions. I think having developed a very strong legal and operational framework with our own counterparties also helps provide reassurance that our offering is actually well designed and strong.
Great. I have one final question, which is essentially what's next for Credi. Are there any milestones ahead or anything you're excited about as you come to market?
Yes, very exciting. Obviously, our immediate milestone is to achieve a specific critical mass when it comes to asset under management. But when you approach liquidity providers, there is one particular aspect actually I'm very excited about, which is a technology feature we are developing, and it will make our offering even more enticing. So one of the key features that our potential liquidity providers often ask, it's liquidity. So how liquid is your offering? Now, obviously, because we deal with assets that have a very short-term exposure and they're akin to a fixed income instrument, so they're not subject to the volatility of the markets, for example. They're not cyclical in nature. The other aspect is liquidity. So at the moment, we can offer minimum liquidity of 3 months. But what we want to develop is we've launched our own token, the credit tokens that enable investors to invest in our offerings. What we're really developing is actually a secondary market for the token. And I think that going live with this particular feature in our platform, so the credit exchange, as we want to call it, is going to attract even more interest to the offering.
I'm wishing you every success. Obviously, you've managed bigger amounts of money before. Hopefully, we'll get there soon with credit. But I really appreciate your time, Alessio, and thank you for your insights.
Thank you very much. Thank you.